Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Bankruptcy Discharge and Actual Fraud Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On May 16, 2016, the Supreme Court decided Husky International Electronics, Inc. v. Ritz. Between 2003 and 2007, Husky International Electronics sold and delivered electronic device components worth more than $160,000 to Chrysalis Manufacturing Corp. Chrysalis, then under the financial control of Daniel Ritz, failed to pay for the goods, and Ritz encouraged the transfer of funds from Chrysalis to various other companies. Ritz held substantial ownership stakes in these companies, which had not given reasonably equivalent value in exchange for the Chrysalis funds. In May 2009, Husky sued Ritz in federal district court, seeking to hold him personally liable for Chrysalis' debt. Ritz filed a voluntary Chapter 7 bankruptcy petition, and Husky then filed a complaint in the bankruptcy court, alleging actual fraud to preclude a discharge of Ritz's debts. The bankruptcy court ruled that Husky had failed to prove actual fraud, however, and the district court affirmed that decision. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit likewise affirmed the lower court judgments, finding no record evidence of a false representation by the debtor, which the Fifth Circuit deemed a necessary predicate to establish actual fraud. The question before the Supreme Court was whether the actual fraud bar to discharge under Section 523A2A of the Bankruptcy Code applies only when the debtor has made a false representation, or whether the bar also applies when the debtor has deliberately obtained money through a fraudulent transfer scheme that was actually intended to cheat a creditor. By a vote of 7-1, the Supreme Court reversed the judgment of the Fifth Circuit and remanded the case. Justice Sotomayor delivered the opinion of the court, which held that the term actual fraud in Section 523A2A of the Bankruptcy Code encompasses fraudulent conveyance schemes, even when those schemes do not involve a false representation. The majority opinion was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Kennedy, Ginsburg, Breyer, Alito, and Kagan. Justice Thomas filed a dissenting opinion. To discuss the case, we have Zvi Rosen, who is a visiting scholar at Hofstra University Maurice A. Dean School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Rosen.
So very briefly, this fellow Ritz was running Husky, and he transferred assets away from Husky to a number of entities that he had partial ownership and or control of, and Ritz subsequently declared personal bankruptcy. There's a longer rundown of the facts in the argument podcast that I did a few months ago. Now, with Ritz and Chapter 7 bankruptcy, Husky argued, one, that he owes money for that Ritz owes Husky money for money transferred away, and secondly, that these transfers from Husky to entities that Ritz controlled were not dischargeable. In other words, the liability that Ritz would owe to Husky for these transfers was a non-dischargeable debt. Below, Ritz argued a number of theories for why the debts are in fact dischargeable and that none of the non-dischargeability provisions of Section 523 of the Bankruptcy Code apply. This went up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court held an opinion by Justice Sotomayor that the debt is not dischargeable. This is over a dissent by Justice Thomas. So a little side note to bear in mind discussing this case is there is no actual judgment of indebtedness, whether or not there is a debt for this yet. Rather, the holding that if there is a debt, it is not dischargeable, which is putting the cart a little bit backwards, but that's how the procedure went. I will also note that even though there was not a judgment of indebtedness, the bankruptcy court did find that Ritz was an unreliable witness, which generally augurs poorly for the debtor. This all revolves around Section 523A2A of the Bankruptcy Code, and that's a sort of complicated way of saying a pretty simple provision. Section 523A2A states that a discharge under various sections of the Bankruptcy Code, basically all of them, does not discharge an individual debtor, so it has to be an individual, not a corporation, from any debt, and we go to for money, property, services, or an extension, renewal, refinancing of credit to the extent obtained by false pretenses, a false representation, or actual fraud. So in a nutshell, a discharge under the Bankruptcy Code does not discharge a debt for assets to the extent those assets were obtained by false pretenses, a false representation, or actual fraud. And going into this case, it was pretty clearly going to be a case of statutory construction. And Justice Sotomayor sort of took what people saw as the most straightforward approach to this case, which was that in 1978, when they created the Bankruptcy Code out of the old Bankruptcy Act, they added actual fraud. Previously, the relevant section said that a debt will be not dischargeable for false pretenses or a false representation, and they added actual fraud in 1978. Now, Ritz was trying to say effectively that there is a requirement of making a false representation in order for a debt to be not dischargeable under Section 523A2A. Justice Sotomayor says, well, they added actual fraud to the statute in 1978. That must mean something different from false representation. Ergo, there is not a requirement of making that a false representation be made in order to find actual fraud. Now, there was an attempt to say that Section 727 is relevant here and putting that into interpretation of fraud, but because Section 727 has a somewhat broader approach to fraud, but Section 727 was not really correct, was not really applicable here, and the dissent doesn't try to push it either. Section 727 is the provision that states that a discharge is not going to be granted at all if someone commits fraud as part of a bankruptcy proceeding or a year prior. The 727 is really about the whole discharge being denied because granting the discharge would reward fraud, whereas Section 523 is saying individual debts are not dischargeable because we consider the origin of those debts sufficiently problematic that they shouldn't be dischargeable. So that's majority opinion. This is sort of a slam dunk reason. Not a slam dunk, but it was seen as an obvious rationale for it. And Justice Thomas in dissent takes an interesting approach that the majority addresses somewhat, but not completely, and I'll explain how they address it. Basically, Justice Thomas says that, okay, I certainly agree that that amendment is something we should be aware of, but let's look, instead of looking at the history, let's look at what it actually says, which is that certainly it sets false pretenses, a false representation, or actual fraud, and that debts resulting from receipt of funds are not dischargeable. But what it actually says is a discharge under the Bankruptcy Code does not discharge an individual debtor from any debt for receipt of assets. And then here's the words that Justice Thomas focuses on in the statute: to the extent obtained by false pretenses, a false representation, or actual fraud. And what Justice Thomas points out is that, well, wait a minute here. The statute isn't merely saying that you have to, that these have to be resultant somehow from this. It says, to the extent that the money, property, services, or an extension, renewal, or refinancing of credit are obtained by false pretense and false representation or actual fraud, then the debt is not dischargeable. And Justice Thomas says that requires that there be an actual fraud that leads to the extent to the money, property, or services. And the fact that there may have been a fraudulent conveyance of these assets does not qualify as an actual fraud that leads to the extension of credit. And Justice Sotomayor, in response, and this is a partial response, says, well, yes, but there was a fraudulent conveyance here, and that's how the money was gotten. And I think it's telling to look at Section 523A4 briefly, which is two sections down from A2. And Section A4 does not require, says a debt is not dischargeable if it results from fraud or defalcation, acting in fiduciary capacity, embezzlement, or larceny. And there is no requirement if a debt be obtained by fraud, is saying that, or rather, no requirement that money or anything else be obtained by fraud, is simply that if a debt results from fraud or defalcation while you're a fiduciary, then it's not dischargeable. On the other hand, A2A requires that the debt results from receipt of money or other things by actual fraud. And Justice Thomas says this is simply not what's going on here. There's a broader question here about what exactly a fraudulent conveyance here that's sort of skipped over, because the name fraudulent conveyance sounds a lot like fraud, but as people who have been around bankruptcy will know, fraudulent conveyance at its core means that something was conveyed for less than reasonably equivalent value, not necessarily that it was actual fraud. Something could be an actual fraudulent conveyance without being necessarily an actual fraud. So the key thing here is, and the takeaway, is that if there is an actual fraudulent conveyance, there is no requirement that there be a representation to the creditor. There is simply a requirement that the debt be obtained by some sort of fraud that is seen as actual fraud by the court, and we're not going to worry about whether or not false representations were made necessarily.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.